The Bullitt County Board of Commissioners held a comprehensive nearly meeting that tackled a variety of pressing issues, including zoning, fire protection services, and the ongoing impact of growth on infrastructure and schools on Tuesday, December 3, 2024. Fire protection services took center stage as the commissioners discussed the termination of an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Statesboro. Fire Chief Ben Tapley advocated for the county to take over fire services in the Five Mile District, citing financial inefficiencies and limitations under the current agreement. He emphasized the county's ability to provide expanded services at a lower cost. After considering the benefits of renegotiating terms or transitioning the service entirely, the board unanimously voted to terminate the agreement, opening the door for a new approach to fire protection. The current agreement was entered into in June of 2020 and has a 5-year term commencing on July 1, 2020 and ending on June 30, 2025. Chairman Roy Thompson opened the meeting by recognizing three local Junior Olympic archery development competitors. Melanie Blake, Luke Knight, and Lawton Elmore were honored for their achievements in New Mexico, receiving certificates and praise for their dedication and success. The ceremony highlighted the community's pride in its young athletes. Tony Rojas presented updates to the Revised Groundwater Sustainability Program, RGSP, responding to public concerns raised at a prior meeting. The updated plan now includes private and small community wells under the program and establishes a timeline for mitigation efforts. Rojas clarified misconceptions about potential use of Savannah's water supply, assuring the public that no saltwater intrusion would occur and that alternate water sources would not impact private wells. Public comments included Cassandra Mickle calling for a properly announced public hearing to ensure citizens had adequate time to review the plan. Ultimately, the board voted to defer further discussion to the December 17 meeting to allow for more input and transparency. The commissioners also held a public hearing on a petition to abandon a portion of Woodrum Road. While Allen and Matthew Woodrum cited safety concerns, trespassing, and illegal dumping as reasons for the request, opponents like Luru Lord and Gail Williams argued that the road's closure would negatively impact access, safety, and property values. After hearing both sides, the commissioners decided to keep the road open, emphasizing its continued use by local residents. In zoning matters, the board addressed several requests, including rezoning applications for residential and mixed-use developments on Burkhalter Road and Josh Deal Road. While developers like Blue Water Bullock, LLC presented revised plans to address density and infrastructure concerns, opponents raised issues about traffic safety, road conditions, and the strain on local resources. Despite these concerns, the commissioners approved several rezoning requests, often with conditions, to ensure alignment with county standards and long-term planning goals. Fire protection services also took center stage as the commissioners discussed the termination of an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Statesboro. Fire Chief Ben Tapley advocated for the county to take over fire services in the Five Mile District, citing financial inefficiencies and limitations under the current agreement. He emphasized the county's ability to provide expanded services at a lower cost. After considering the benefits of renegotiating terms or transitioning the service entirely, the board unanimously voted to terminate the agreement, opening the door for a new approach to fire protection. Public comments highlighted the community's concerns about growth, infrastructure, and governance. Jimmy Deloach praised the commission's efforts but urged them to continue making tough decisions to keep Bullitt County a great place to live. Tim Powell called for proactive measures under the RGSP to address potential well issues before they arise. Meanwhile, Leisha Neville, Board of Education member-elect, argued for a building moratorium, citing the strain on schools and infrastructure due to rapid development. She stressed the importance of collaboration among the city, county, and school board to ensure sustainable growth. The meeting wrapped up with the approval of various consent agenda items, including service contracts and zoning variances, and the discussion of a proposed special purpose local option sales tax, SPLOST, resolution. The commissioners were met with another full house crowd, showing they care about decisions in the community. Blake Williams, the first. Call to order, welcome media and visitors. 2. Invocation and Pledge. 3. Roll Call. IV. Presentation. 1. 2024 USA Archery JOD Target Nationals and JOD US Open Competitors. Chairman Roy Thompson introduced three young archers from Bullock County who competed in the Junior Olympic Archery Development, JOD, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With a lighthearted, Price is Right reference, he invited the competitors to come forward for recognition. Melanie Blake, third place winner and fifth overall finisher. Luke Knight, second place winner and fourth overall finisher. Lawton Elmore, 19th place winner and 10th overall finisher. Chairman Thompson praised their achievements, joked about their hunting skills, and presented them with certificates of recognition. He invited their parents to join for a group photo, closing the presentation with applause for their success. Lawton Elmore, Melanie Blake, Luke Knight with their families and the Board of Commissioners. Blake Williams. 2. Presentation of Revised Groundwater Sustainability Program. During the presentation of the Revised Groundwater Sustainability Program, RGSP, Tony Rojas addressed changes made following public feedback from the November 19 meeting. He highlighted two key updates to the plan. First, the language was revised to ensure that private and small community wells are explicitly included under the permit, addressing concerns about their exclusion. Second, a timeline was added for mitigation efforts. Basic mitigation work will now be completed within 5 calendar days of work order approval, with additional time accounted for new well installations to ensure proactive planning and minimize disruptions. Rojas also clarified a misunderstanding about future alternate water sources, such as surface water from Savannah, would replace private wells and require them to join a centralized water system. He explained that these alternate sources are intended to reduce reliance on 4 specific wells owned by Bryan and Bullock counties, with no impact on private wells. Additionally, Rojas informed the commissioners that Bryan County's adoption of the RGSP, originally scheduled for December 3rd, was postponed due to a quorum issue and will now take place on December 16, 2024. Following his presentation, Chairman Roy Thompson invited public input. After a unanimous vote by the commissioners, the public was allowed to ask questions and provide comments, given the county's commitment to transparency and addressing citizen concerns. Cassandra Mickle raised concerns about the absence of a properly announced public hearing. She recalled that at the previous meeting, commissioners indicated a public hearing would be held, but it was not included on the agenda for the December 3rd meeting. Mickle said that public hearings should be announced in advance to ensure that those affected by the issue have an opportunity to prepare and participate. She highlighted the long-term impact of the RGSP, noting it commits Bullock County to a 25-year plan, which requires thorough consideration and thoughtful planning. Mickle urged the commissioners to schedule a formal public hearing with at least 7 days' notice, giving citizens time to review the plan, raise concerns, and engage in meaningful dialogue. She concluded by stressing the importance of transparency and public involvement in decisions of this size. Another question that was raised was, is the water coming from Savannah going to be saltwater? Which Mr. Rojas responded that there is no saltwater coming from Savannah to Bullock County. This was a misunderstanding. Rojas explained that the Environmental Protection Division, EPD, has confirmed through extensive modeling that saltwater intrusion cannot reach this far inland. He assured the public that saltwater will not pose a threat to the county's water system. Nick Newkirk, County Commissioner-elect, raised several questions about the pricing and process for well inspections under the Groundwater Sustainability Program, RGSP. He asked whether there was a set cost for preliminary well inspections and how the proposed $1 million fund would be allocated for this purpose. In response, Tony Rojas explained that the process begins with outreach to residents, informing them about the program and collecting well information. There is no fixed cost for inspections up front. Instead, issues with specific wells would trigger inspections. These would involve soliciting bids from well drillers, a process that would establish pricing for services such as inspections and potential repairs. Rojas further clarified that the county would use a request for proposals, RFP, process to secure vendors. This process would ensure transparent pricing for equipment and services, allowing the county to have predefined costs when work is required. He emphasized that both Bullock and Bryan County Commissions would review and approve the vendor selection and pricing. Newkirk also questioned whether all commissioners had reviewed the RGSP thoroughly, but no direct response was provided to that query during the meeting. Commissioner Ray Davis stated that while he supports providing assurance to residents within the 5-mile radius, the current plan is long on narrative and short on specifics. He emphasized that the plan, as it stands, lacks the clarity needed for a positive vote. Davis also pointed out that 4 of the 8 original signatories of the Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, will not return next year, leaving incoming commissioners to inherit a plan they did not help develop. He strongly endorsed holding a formal public hearing to gather more input and ensure transparency. Following Davis's comments, a motion was made and approved to defer the RGSP discussion and vote to the December 17, 2024, meeting. V. Public hearing, road abandonment, closure. Road remains open 1. Public hearing and resolution to abandon a portion of County Road No. 8A, K.A. Woodrum Road. The attached petition has been submitted requesting that the commissioners consider abandoning a portion of Woodrum Road. In accordance with Georgia law, the commissioners must hold a public hearing on this issue before taking action to formally abandon this portion of Woodrum Road. The attached public hearing notice was published in the Statesboro Herald on Thursday, November 21 and Thursday, November 28, and property owners on the road were personally notified of the hearing with a letter sent via regular U.S. mail. If, after conducting a public hearing, the commissioners find that abandonment of a portion of County Road No. 8, also known as Woodrum Road, is warranted because it has ceased to be used by the public to the extent that no substantial public purpose is served by it or its removal from the county road system is otherwise in the best public interest, then the commissioners may adopt the attached resolution to certify abandonment of the road. During the public hearing on the petition to abandon a portion of Woodrum Road, Alan and Matthew Woodrum presented their case, citing safety concerns and the minimal impact of the closure on local travel. Alan Woodrum explained that the 1.19-mile stretch of road proposed for abandonment is primarily used by himself, his cousin Matthew, and his father. He highlighted ongoing issues with trespassing, illegal dumping, and property damage, such as vehicles running over pine trees. Law enforcement has frequently been called to address incidents, including trespassers engaging in illegal activities in their pastures. Alan noted that the road serves no essential purpose as it does not provide a necessary thoroughfare, adding only 0.8 miles to alternate routes. Matthew Woodrum shared a recent and alarming incident. Approximately 2 months ago, individuals armed with Arkansas 15 rifles stopped 200 yards from his house and began firing. At the time, his wife was on the porch, and their children were in the yard. While law enforcement responded, the incident shows the dangers posed by unregulated access to the area. Matthew also described frequent encounters with trespassers during the summer, raising concerns about liability if someone were injured while on their land without permission. He and Alan both noted that they have been forced to purchase additional liability insurance to protect themselves. The Woodrums noted their desire to preserve the land, which has been in their family since the 1920s, and maintain its safety and viability for future generations. They reiterated that the road is unnecessary for through traffic, as alternate routes are faster and more practical. Both urged the commissioners to give serious consideration to their request for abandonment. Luru Lord acknowledged the Woodrum's safety concerns and shared that her family also deals with similar issues on their own rural property. However, she said that abandoning the road would negatively impact her family, which has owned property in the area for 40 years. The road provides 2 critical access points to their property, and closure would force reliance on an alternate road that frequently floods and washes out due to its low elevation and shallow ditches. Losing access via Woodrum Road would create a dead end, which she argued could lead to the area becoming a dumping ground, further devaluing her family's property. Lord highlighted the frequent use of the road by her family and others, including 8 different families connected to the property, such as the Altman, Lyraci, and Lord families. The road is essential for activities such as hunting, fishing, dog training, and timber management. She noted that members of her family often visit the property multiple times a day and regularly encounter other vehicles using the road. Additionally, Lord expressed personal safety concerns, explaining that she feels more secure having access to a route leading to more populated areas, such as Dollar General. She also described the potential challenges of navigating a dead-end road, particularly if people were congregating there, making her feel unsafe. Gail McLaren-Williams acknowledged the Woodrum's concerns too, but noted that her family has addressed similar issues by installing cameras to monitor their property. While they have experienced problems in the past, they have successfully resolved them without requiring road closure. She cited the potential negative impact on property values if Woodrum Road were turned into a dead end. Williams also raised concerns about emergency accessibility, citing the aftermath of Hurricane Helene as an example. During the storm, trees blocked both ends of the road, temporarily cutting off access. She expressed worry about similar scenarios in the future if one access point were permanently removed. Williams noted that many vehicles travel along the road, though she was uncertain about their origin. As a longtime resident who has lived and continues to live on the property, she expressed a desire for her children and grandchildren to maintain the ability to access the area without the limitations of a dead-end road. Thomas Stedman, a resident of the area for 40 years, shared that he frequently uses Woodrum Road, traveling along it as recently as 4 times in the past week. For him, the road serves as a shorter route to Middle Ground, making it an important part of his daily travel. He expressed concerns about the implications of turning the road into a dead end, which he believed would limit accessibility for his property and others in the area. While acknowledging that reduced accessibility could potentially lower his taxes, Stedman emphasized that it would also diminish the value of his 30-acre property. He noted the difficulty of opposing neighbors like the Woodrums in matters like these, but felt it was important to share his perspective as a resident directly impacted by the potential closure. Alan Woodrum acknowledged Stedman's point about the importance of being good neighbors and said that they are not trying to cause harm or inconvenience. He pointed out that during Hurricane Helene, it was he and Matthew who cleared trees off the road to restore access, showing their willingness to step up in emergencies. He assured attendees that this would not change even if the road were closed. The Woodrums said that their primary concern is creating a safe environment for their children and families. Alan dismissed fears about decreased property values, explaining that he does not see how a cul-de-sac at the road's end would lead to such an outcome. He also addressed dumping concerns, stating that fewer people would travel down a dead-end road, particularly with 2 deputies stationed nearby, making it safer and less likely to attract illegal activities. After a discussion between the commissioners, they decided that people still rely on the road to be open, so it will remain open. V. Approval of zoning agenda. Planning and Development Director James Pope asked if Item 2 could be put behind Item 12 for time's sake, and the motion was approved. Approved 1. D.R. Horton, INC, has submitted an application requesting a variance of 250 gallons per minute from 500 GPM as required by Appendix B, Subdivision Regulations Schedule 7.7.10. The property is located at the intersection of Amanda Road and Youngblood Road. James Pope provided an overview of the variance request by D.R. Horton, Inc., represented by Lindsay Martin. The application sought a variance to reduce the water flow requirement from 500 gallons per minute, GPM, to 250 GPM, as outlined in Appendix B, Subdivision Regulations, Schedule 7.7.10. The property in question is located at the intersection of Amanda Road and Youngblood Road, just north of Highway 80, east of Statesboro. Pope explained that both the Planning and Zoning Commission and county staff recommended denial of the request. The commission voted 5-0 against the variance. He then provided a detailed background on the subdivision, which had previously been rezoned to R25 but later transitioned to R15 zoning. During the initial development, the health department refused to sign off on the final plat after discovering that the developer had removed a majority of the topsoil, creating issues with soil stability and compliance. This halted progress despite the installation of a water system on the site. Subsequently, while the zoning and subdivision regulations evolved, the developer failed to renew the development process in a timely manner, leading to the current request. Pope acknowledged that Martin, the current agent, was not at fault for these issues, as they originated with the previous developer. He concluded by noting that significant groundwork would likely be required to bring the water system into compliance with current standards before turning the discussion over to Martin for further input. Lindsay Martin, the representative for D.R. Horton, Inc., addressed the issues surrounding the variance request. He explained that the infrastructure for the subdivision, including roads, curbs, gutters, and drainage systems, was installed around 2017 or 2018. The development had been approved by the Environmental Protection Division, EPD, but the original developer failed to complete the necessary paperwork, which led to the current complications. Martin highlighted the financial implications of the stalled project, noting that the delay could result in a waste of approximately $300,000, with total costs up to around $720,000. He said that the subdivision is essentially ready to proceed and described the situation as an unfortunate mishap. Martin requested leniency from the commissioners to allow the variance and move the project forward, expressing his willingness to answer any questions to clarify the matter further. The commissioners approved the variance. Approved with conditions 3. Blue Water Bullock, LLC, has submitted an application to rezone approximately for 89.61 acres from R80, residential 80,000 square feet, to PUD1, Planned Unit Development 1, for the purpose of developing a mixed residential development including single-family detached units and single-family attached, townhome, units. The property is located on Burkhalter Road. Pope outlined a rezoning request for approximately 89.6 acres on Burkhalter Road. The application sought to rezone the property from R80, residential, 80,000 square foot minimum lot size, to PUD1, Planned Unit Development 1, to allow for a mixed residential development comprising single-family detached units and townhomes. Pope noted that the case had been deferred to the current meeting after the Planning and Zoning Commission previously recommended denial with a 5-0 vote. While county staff recommended conditions should the project be approved, concerns had been raised about infrastructure, particularly water and sewer services for the development. The property is located east of Statesboro and northeast of Highway 80, with adjacent parcels zoned R80 and AG5. Pope pointed out that the northern portion of the property contains wetlands, which are undevelopable but included in the calculations for open space. The proposed site plan showed single-family homes fronting Burkhalter Road, with townhomes located in the interior. Pope also addressed the issue of water and sewer service, noting that while it may become feasible in the future due to nearby PUD developments with planned service, there is currently no infrastructure in place. He explained that the PUD zoning would have a 2-year time limit, requiring the developer to return for re-evaluation if the project does not proceed within that time frame. Steve Rushing, attorney for Blue Water Bullock LLC, presented updates on the rezoning request and addressed previous concerns from commissioners and the public. He explained that the 89.6-acre property on Burkhalter Road, along with an adjacent parcel, addressed in zoning item 4, is under contract for purchase from the current owner, Don Lanier. Rushing first tackled the issue of water and sewer service. Following commissioner questions from the previous meeting, the developers looked into options and confirmed that their development will tie into the Adelaide subdivision's infrastructure, which is further along in the planning process. Adelaide's construction is expected to begin between February and April 2025, with Blue Water's development approximately 4 to 6 months behind. Both projects will meet the 2-year requirement for planned unit development commencement, with Blue Water installing a lift station to pump sewer to Adelaide's system. Next, Rushing addressed density concerns by presenting a revised site plan. The new plan eliminates the originally proposed 108 townhomes, replacing them with 64 additional single-family units. This change reduces the total number of units from 209 to 165, lowering the development's density from 2.5 units per acre to 1.7 units per acre. The revised site plan was submitted to the county the prior week and was presented to the commissioners for consideration. Rushing confirmed that the developers would accept a rezoning condition requiring adherence to the revised plan. Rushing also outlined the conditions proposed by staff. The developers agree to deed 15 feet of additional right-of-way along Burkhalter Road to the county. A left-turn lane will be installed. Developers prefer not to include the proposed condition related to street lighting, citing compliance with the existing streetlight ordinance. In conclusion, Rushing requested the commission approve the rezoning to PUD1 with the revised site plan and the staff recommended conditions, excluding the third condition regarding street lighting. He emphasized that the project aligns with the comprehensive use plan, the new density is well below PUD1 allowances, and the changes address key concerns from both commissioners and the public. Lisa Sykes spoke in opposition to the proposed rezoning and raised concerns about the safety and infrastructure of Burkhalter Road and the surrounding area. Sykes began by noting the dangers of Burkhalter Road, particularly at its intersection with Highway 80. She highlighted the heavy traffic from 18-wheelers, farm equipment, and vehicles transporting agricultural products such as peanuts and cotton. The bridge at Mill Creek, located near the proposed subdivision, has not been inspected in some time, adding to her concerns about road safety. As a resident living less than half a mile from the proposed development, Sykes described personal experiences with hazardous conditions, including the risk of rear-end collisions when turning into her driveway. She noted that these issues are not unique to her and are shared by others in the community. Sykes criticized the focus on development while road conditions are neglected, citing the need for improvements to handle increased traffic. She also questioned the methods used to assess traffic impacts, asking how decisions are being made about the feasibility of the project without adequately addressing these concerns. Sykes specifically called out issues with flooding on Burkhalter Road, which makes it dangerous during rainstorms, and uneven repairs that damage vehicles. Pam Davis voiced opposition to the proposed PUD development, citing noncompliance with county ordinances, public safety concerns, and infrastructure issues. Davis began by referencing the functional classification map of Bullitt County Roads, which designates Burkhalter Road as a rural minor road. She said that county ordinances require PUD developments to be located on major collector roads, a standard this proposal does not meet. She argued that the traffic study conducted for the development only examined the stretch from Highway 80 to the proposed driveway and ignored other hazardous sections, such as a blind curve and changes in elevation. She raised serious concerns about the design of the development from a public safety perspective. Davis questioned how emergency vehicles like ladder trucks, tankers, EMS, and fire personnel would navigate the development, particularly in emergencies where quick access and exit are critical. She described the roads within the proposed development as insufficient, lacking curbs and gutters in many areas, and noted that buildings in certain sections were so closely packed that they resembled urban areas in large cities rather than the suburban character expected in Bullitt County. Davis also criticized the lack of sidewalks, trails, and connectivity in the design, pointing out that the development would leave residents isolated with no nearby stores or transportation options. She noted that the closest store is a Dollar General 2 miles away, and the nearest grocery store and public transportation are 5 miles away. Davis said that the required water and sewer infrastructure is not yet available and argued that promises of future service do not constitute actual readiness. She urged the commissioners to deny the PUD request, aligning with the Planning and Zoning Commission's earlier unanimous recommendation for denial. She suggested that the developers should return in 6 months with a more refined plan, addressing the identified concerns and ensuring the project aligns with ordinances and infrastructure needs. Tammy Collins expressed relief that townhomes were removed from the updated plan but maintained that even single-family housing at the proposed scale was excessive for the area. She described a growing trend of development proposals targeting farmland and open spaces along Burkhalter Road, noting that it feels like a weekly occurrence. Collins pointed out that while maps of the area may give the impression of a dense, built-up zone, the reality is far different, with 11 large acreage farms within a 1.5-mile stretch between Highway 80 and the proposed development. She noted the frequent presence of tractors, tractor-trailers, and agricultural equipment on Burkhalter Road, which contributes to the deteriorating road conditions. Residents familiar with the road often drive cautiously, swerving to avoid potholes and bumps, while others unfamiliar with the area end up damaging their vehicles. Collins also mentioned the challenge posed by air fertilizer equipment in the area, emphasizing the rural and agricultural character of the community. Collins contrasted the well-maintained farms and owner-occupied homes in the area with nearby rental properties, which she described as poorly maintained and detrimental to the community's appearance over time. She referenced specific examples, such as the Burkhalter Senior Mobile Home Park and Sea Pines, both of which started as promising developments but have since become eyesores. Her fear is that the proposed development, while initially appealing, would eventually degrade into a similar state. She also brought attention to a new sign installed near the proposed subdivision site since the last meeting, warning of a blind driveway ahead. The placement of this sign underscores the existing traffic hazards on Burkhalter Road, particularly around the area proposed for development. Rushing addressed public concerns and clarified the changes made to the development plan to address feedback. Representing Blue Water Bullock LLC, Rushing noted that comments from residents at the previous meeting, particularly those from Lisa Sykes and Pam Davis, had been taken into account. He said that traffic concerns were addressed both through the county's long-range traffic plan and the traffic study submitted with the application. The study recommended a left-turn lane, which had been incorporated into the project as a condition of approval. Rushing explained that the revised site plan removed the 108 townhomes originally proposed, replacing them with additional single-family dwellings. This adjustment reduced the total number of units from 209 to 165 and lowered the density from 2.5 units per acre to 1.7. The revised plan retained the same road and sidewalk layouts, ensuring continuity and compliance with county standards. When questioned about the legal ability to approve the revised plan, Rushing deferred to County Attorney Jeff Akins. Akins confirmed that the ordinance allows for changes if they result in a less dense residential layout, as in this case, and that the changes align with public hearing notices and procedural requirements. In response to a concern about the potential $92,000 loss to the county over 7 years due to the development, Rushing explained that such deficits are typical of residential projects. However, he noted that the county offsets these losses through revenue generated by industrial and commercial developments, which help balance the overall budget. The commissioners ultimately made a motion to approve the rezoning request based on the revised site plan. The motion included eliminating Condition 3, which pertained to streetlight standards, in favor of following the existing ordinance, and adding a condition limiting the development to single-family dwellings as per the revised plan. The motion passed with a 4-2 vote in favor of the rezoning and revised plan. Approved, same conditions as Item 3-4. Blue Water Bullock, LLC, has submitted an application to rezone approximately for 9.51 acres from R80, residential 80,000 square feet, to PUD1, Planned Unit Development 1. For the purpose of developing a mixed residential development including single-family detached units and single-family attached townhome units. The property is located on Burkhalter Road. Approved 5. Matthew E. Wood has submitted an application to rezone approximately 3.3 acres from AG5, agriculture 5 acres, to R22 family residential, minimum lot size 15,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating 5 additional parcels on Oakwood Doctor for duplexes. Hope introduced Item 5, explaining that Matthew Wood had submitted an application to rezone approximately 3.3 acres from AG5, agricultural, 5 acres, to R2, 2-family residential, to create 5 additional parcels intended for duplex structures. Pope provided background on the property, which is located south of Statesboro, with access to Highway 301 via Oakwood Drive. The property consists of two parcels under common ownership, highlighted in yellow on the site plan. Oakwood Drive, a county-maintained dirt road, serves the area, and the subdivision predates current zoning ordinances. The proposed parcels, labeled A through E, will accommodate a mix of single-family and two-family dwellings, which is consistent with other developments in the area. Pope noted that there are plans within the county's five-year capital improvements program to pave Oakwood Drive. The commissioners approved this rezoning request. Approved 6. FRANKJO, LLC has submitted an application to rezone approximately 1.5 acres from AG5, agricultural 5 acres, to R25, residential 25,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating a residential neighborhood. The property is located at 201 Rimes Lane. Pope introduced item 6, explaining that Frank Joe LLC had submitted an application to rezone approximately 1.5 acres from AG5, agricultural, 5 acres, to R25, residential, 25,000 square foot lot minimum, for the purpose of creating a residential neighborhood. Pope provided an overview of the property, noting its location south of I-16, near Highway 67 and Forest Mitchell Road. The parcels in question were part of a larger subdivision previously rezoned earlier in the year. While these two parcels were initially excluded, they were part of the same overall development plan. Access to the parcels will not be from Ryan's Lane, which is reserved for emergency use, but via Forest Mitchell Road, as shown in the site plan. Steve Rushing admitted to an oversight when the original rezoning request for the larger 94-acre tract was submitted. The two smaller parcels, totaling approximately 1.5 acres, had been carved out of the larger tract at some point but were reassembled as part of the development plan. The site plan submitted earlier this year had included these parcels in the design, but the separate tax parcels were not rezoned at the time. Rushing explained that this application was meant to correct that oversight and ensure the entire 105-acre development is uniformly zoned as R25. No public comments were made regarding this request, and after brief discussion, the commissioners unanimously approved the rezoning request, completing the zoning requirements for the development. Approved with Condition 7. Kelly Brown has submitted an application to rezone approximately 61.61 acres from AG5, agriculture 5 acres, to R3, residential 15,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating a neighborhood consisting of two-family dwellings. The property is located on Old Riggs Mill Road near the intersection of Jessica Lane. Pope introduced item 7, explaining that Kelly Brown had submitted a request to rezone approximately 61.61 acres from AG5, agricultural, 5 acres, to R3, residential, 15,000 square foot lot minimum, for the purpose of creating a neighborhood of two-family dwellings, duplexes. The property is located on Old Riggs Mill Road near Jessica Lane. Cody Rogers of DNC Engineering acted as the applicant's agent. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended denial in a 4-1 vote, but county staff suggested conditions if the request were approved. Pope outlined the general location of the property, which sits in a rural area west of Statesboro. The zoning map showed adjacent properties with R-2 and R3 developments, as well as undeveloped areas surrounding the proposed site. He noted that the site plan detailed the two-family dwelling units, with drain fields for individual structures clearly labeled. Cody Rogers presented updates to the original plan, highlighting significant changes made since the Planning and Zoning Commission's review. A major adjustment was the decision to exclude approximately 31 acres from the rezoning request, leaving that portion zoned as AG5. This change was made after discussions with neighboring property owners who had raised concerns during the planning and zoning meeting. The excluded acreage, represented as a large white space on the revised site plan, significantly reduced the development's footprint. Rogers explained that the revised request now focuses on 38 total units, with 36 clustered in one section and a single unit on a 5-acre parcel that may ultimately remain a single-family home. Despite the reduction, the density of the remaining development remains consistent with R-40 zoning standards, at just over 1 unit per acre. The commissioners approved with conditions. Approved with conditions 8. Brian Carty has submitted an application to rezone approximately 15.5 acres from R-40, residential 40,000 square feet, to R-25, residential 25,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating a single-family subdivision. The property is located on Josh Deal Road near the intersection of Harville Road. Pope introduced item 8, detailing a request by Brian Carty to rezone approximately 15.5 acres from R-40, residential, 40,000 square foot lot minimum, to R-25, residential, 25,000 square foot lot minimum, for the creation of a single-family subdivision. The property is located along Josh Deal Road near its intersection with Harville Road. Andrew Lavoie, acting as the applicant's agent, represented Carty during the hearing. Pope explained that the Planning and Zoning Commission had recommended approval of the request by a 5-0 vote, and staff supported approval with conditions outlined in the staff report. The property is situated south of Statesboro in an area transitioning from agricultural use to suburban residential development. Pope noted that adjacent properties have similar zoning, including the nearby Mayberry subdivision, which is under development. Staff recommended interparcel connectivity between the proposed development and the Mayberry subdivision to enhance access and reduce traffic impact on surrounding roads. The proposal includes 12 lots with septic systems and a private water source. Andrew Lavoie presented further details, stating that the rezoning request aligns with the suburban character of the area and existing developments such as Wedgefield and Mayberry subdivisions. Lavoie explained that the site plan includes a road connection to Mayberry, consistent with the county's requirement for interparcel connectivity. He also highlighted that the proposed zoning is compatible with nearby developments, supporting the area's ongoing residential growth. Lavoie assured the commissioners that the applicant is agreeable to the conditions recommended by staff. During the discussion, commissioners acknowledged the property's historical significance to the Carty family, noting that it had been owned and farmed by the applicant's family for generations. One commissioner remarked on Carty's intention to develop the land himself, distinguishing the request from speculative development. The rezoning request, including the recommended conditions, was unanimously approved following a motion and a second. Approved with conditions 9. Brian Carty has submitted an application to rezone approximately 15 acres from R-40, residential 40,000 square feet, to R-3 multiple family residential 15,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating a multi-family, townhome, subdivision. Pope introduced item 9, explaining that Brian Carty had submitted a request to rezone approximately 15 acres from R-40, residential, 40,000 square foot lot minimum, to R-3, multiple family residential, to create a townhome subdivision. The property is located on Harville Road, a collector road suitable for higher traffic capacities. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval by a 5-0 vote, and county staff supported the recommendation with conditions included in the staff report. Pope described the property as part of the same area previously discussed under item 8 but focused on the northern section of the parcel. He highlighted its proximity to other R3 zoned properties along Harville Road, which are anticipated for similar multifamily developments. Pope also mentioned that the next agenda item, item 10, addresses the adjacent parcel, which is intended to provide the drain field for the proposed townhome development. Lavoie reiterated that the request aligns with the surrounding character of Harville Road and the county's comprehensive use plan. He emphasized that the zoning change would continue the logical progression of R3 zoning along Harville Road, similar to developments already approved by the commission in the area. Lavoie noted that while this parcel could not connect directly to the Mayberry subdivision, the proposed townhomes are consistent with the overall suburban and multifamily residential character of the region. Lavoie also clarified the relationship between items 9 and 10, explaining that the next item involves land designated for the drain field supporting the townhomes. He expressed confidence that the project aligns with existing zoning and infrastructure plans, making it a natural fit for the area. After brief discussion, a motion was made and seconded to approve the rezoning request with the recommended conditions. The motion passed unanimously, granting approval for the rezoning. Approved 10. Brian Carty has submitted an application to rezone approximately 1 acre from R40, residential 40,000 square feet, to R3 multiple family residential 15,000 square feet, for the purpose of creating a multi-family, townhome, subdivision. The property is located on Harville Road. Approved with conditions 11. Brian Carty has submitted an application to rezone approximately 9 acres from R40, residential 40,000 square feet, to NC, neighborhood commercial, for the purpose of creating a retail and commercial center, small scale. The property is located on Harville Road. Lavoy presented a request to rezone a parcel at the corner of Harville Road and Josh Deal Road to neighborhood commercial, NC. He explained that the rezoning aligns with the suburban character of the area and meets the growing demand for small-scale commercial development. Lavoy addressed the misalignment between Josh Deal Road and Golf Club Drive at the intersection, noting Carty's commitment to work with the county to address the issue. He confirmed agreement with the two conditions outlined in the staff report, requiring submission of intersection analysis and access plans, and highlighted that the rezoning is consistent with county plans and nearby zoning. Laura Pollock opposed the rezoning, citing safety and traffic concerns. She noted that the area already has 3 convenience stores at the nearby roundabout, meeting local needs. She described a past accident at the Golf Club Road intersection where a car ran a stop sign and crashed into a mobile home, highlighting how dangerous the area is. With new subdivisions, the peanut plant, and potential retail traffic, she warned of worsening congestion and safety risks, especially during busy times. While she supported fixing the intersection's alignment, she questioned if any traffic studies or plans for a light had been done. Pollock urged the commissioners to prioritize community safety over adding more commercial development. Lavoy acknowledged Laura Pollock's concerns and thanked her for sharing them. He emphasized that conditions tied to the rezoning, such as an intersection analysis and access plans approved by the county engineer, would address critical safety and traffic questions before any development begins. Lavoy reassured the commissioners that the proposed project is intended to be small-scale, with only 2 or 3 tenants, aimed at providing needed services to the area. He highlighted the commitment to work with the county on improving the intersection alignment. He concluded by noting that the current request is simply for rezoning to neighborhood commercial, NC, and argued that it aligns with the needs of the community and the existing and approved developments in the area. The motion was approved with conditions. Deferred to next meeting 12. The Home Builders Association of Statesboro, INC, has submitted an application for a text amendment to amend the language of the Bullock County Subdivision Regulations. Pope introduced the agenda item, explaining that the Home Builders Association of Statesboro, Inc. had submitted a request for multiple amendments to the Bullock County Subdivision Regulations. The proposal includes 8 items for consideration, with varying recommendations from staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval for items 1 to 6, including split recommendations for items 4 and 6. Staff supported approval of items 1 to 5 but recommended denial for items 7 and 8, citing public safety concerns. Fire Prevention Chief Ben Tapley was present to address any questions regarding the safety implications of items 7 and 8. Pope outlined the process for discussion, offering to review the proposed amendments item by item or address specific items as requested by the board. County Attorney Jeff Akins noted that 2 versions of the amendments had been prepared, one reflecting the applicant's full request and another reflecting staff recommended approvals. The board was informed that the final approved amendments would be recorded as an exhibit to the minutes. The item was turned over to the agent for the applicant, Chris Gohagan, for further presentation. Gohagan, representing the Home Builders Association of Statesboro, presented proposed amendments to Bullock County's subdivision regulations, emphasizing their potential to improve housing quality, affordability, and availability. He briefly outlined each amendment and their implications before inviting local developers to share their insights. The first proposed amendment seeks to restore the county engineer's authority to approve more concise traffic studies for smaller projects while maintaining best practices. Both the staff and Planning and Zoning Commission recommended this amendment. The second amendment extends the deadline for submitting final plat applications from 18 months to 24 months after preliminary plat approval. This adjustment reflects the increasing complexity of modern engineering and site approvals and was unanimously supported by staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission. The third amendment allows minor changes to sketch plans without requiring additional review by the Planning and Zoning Commission, instead granting approval authority to staff. This change also received unanimous support. The fourth amendment proposed increasing the minimum development size requiring curb and gutter for R25 and denser zoning districts from 50 units to 81 units, revising the original request of 121 units. Zoning districts such as AG5, R80, and R40 would remain exempt from curb and gutter requirements. Gohagan noted consensus between staff and the applicant on the revised threshold, which balances quality design and housing affordability. When asked whether a modification to footnote 7 could achieve the desired compromise for curb and gutter requirements, Gohagan agreed. The revision would state that curb and gutter requirements are not required in R25 zoning districts for subdivisions with fewer than 81 lots, aligning with earlier discussions and the agreed-upon compromise. He then addressed additional amendments, starting with a proposed change to cul-de-sac street design standards. This amendment would allow the county engineer to approve traffic calming measures for cul-de-sacs up to 1,200 linear feet, supported by staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission. Another amendment proposed reducing the right-of-way width for local roads with curb and gutter from 60 feet to 50 feet, creating more flexibility in utility placement. Both staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval. Gohagan also discussed increasing the minimum number of units requiring two public access points from 51 to 121, aligning with the Georgia State Fire Code. However, he acknowledged concerns from public safety officials regarding this proposal. Another amendment focused on community water system standards, proposing a uniform fire flow requirement of 500 gallons per minute, doubling the historical standard of 250 gallons per minute. Gohagan noted that while public safety officials had reservations about this change, other valid considerations warranted the proposal. Jamie Carty, Joey Maxwell, and Keely Fennell spoke in support of the proposed subdivision ordinance amendments, emphasizing the urgent need for affordable housing in Bullock County. Carty, a home builder with 32 years of experience and a representative of the Home Builders Association of Statesboro, noted how rising land and material costs are making it harder to provide affordable homes. He urged the commission to adopt the amendments to help builders meet this challenge. Maxwell focused on balancing fire safety requirements with affordability. He proposed increasing the distance between structures to 30 feet as a way to improve safety without imposing prohibitive costs. Maxwell stressed the importance of ensuring safety while keeping homes attainable for residents. Fennell, a third-generation builder, emphasized the growing unaffordability of housing, noting that even essential workers like teachers and law enforcement struggle to buy homes in the area. She pointed to the rising costs of starter homes and called on the commission to support the amendments, which she believes will allow developers to build quality, affordable homes more efficiently. Ben Tapley, Bullock County Fire Chief, addressed the commission to provide insight into the fire safety requirements related to the subdivision ordinance amendments. He expressed appreciation for the discussion on affordability but emphasized his responsibility to prioritize public safety for the county's 86,527 residents. Tapley explained that the minimum required fire flow of 500 gallons per minute, GPM, was established based on ISO standards and practical testing requirements. During ISO evaluations, hydrants must supply 250 GPM for 2 hours, in addition to meeting the water demands of household activities like showers and dishwashing. Initially, the fire department proposed 1,000 GPM based on the International Fire Code, which recommends that flow rate for homes up to 3,600 square feet. However, the fire department later compromised by introducing a sliding scale, with 500 GPM as the minimum and increasing requirements for larger homes. Tapley emphasized the importance of setting standards during the development stage to ensure safety for future homeowners, who may not fully understand water system limitations when purchasing a home. He acknowledged the challenges posed by rising housing costs but underscored the need for thoughtful compromise to balance affordability and safety. Tapley concluded by turning the discussion over to Prevention Chief Joe Carter for further remarks. Carter emphasized that all provisions in the subdivision ordinance were rooted in the International Fire Code, a nationally recognized and adopted standard. He explained that the fire flow requirements, as developed, aimed to balance safety with the need for affordable housing. The code specifies 1,000 gallons per minute, GPM, for homes up to 3,600 square feet but allows the fire chief to adjust that figure within certain limits. To address local concerns, the ordinance set a minimum of 500 GPM, using ISO-adopted fire flow calculations. Carter clarified that the 500 GPM minimum ensures sufficient water for smaller homes while accounting for ISO standards and domestic usage. Larger homes would require more, with the fire flow increasing proportionally to the size of the house. He stressed that the term, needed fire flow, is used intentionally to signify the required water amount for effective fire suppression, not merely a suggested figure. Carter highlighted the importance of sustainable water supply, particularly given the county's large geographic coverage and extended emergency response times. He cautioned against blanket reductions to fire flow requirements, advocating instead for collaborative solutions that maintain public safety. He underscored that deviating from nationally adopted standards could jeopardize safety and urged thoughtful deliberation. On a related point, Carter addressed the request to reduce the required number of access points for subdivisions. He noted recent catastrophic events in the county where limited access had hindered emergency responses. He ended by telling the audience to hold their breath for 30 seconds to show the difference in response times. The motion is deferred until the December 17th meeting for further review. Moved to next meeting 2. R&H Landholding, LLC, has submitted an application requesting a variance from Appendix B, Subdivision Regulations Schedule 6.7.1. Improvement standards by development scale, major subdivision 50 lots or more, curb and gutter required. Planning and Zoning Commission heard this request on October 10, 2024. The request was denied by a 4-0 vote. Approved 7. Approval of General AGENDA APPROVED 8. Consent AGENDA 1. Minutes Approval. Monday, November 4, 2024, 5:30 p.m. 2. Minutes Approval. Wednesday, November 6, 2024, 5:30 p.m. 3. Minutes Approval. Thursday, November 7, 2024, 5 o'clock p.m. 4. Minutes Approval. Tuesday, November 19, 2024, 8:30 a.m. 5. Approve a sole source 2025 service contract with Stryker Medical. This is a sole source request for approval of a Stryker service contract. The contract includes parts, labor, travel, preventative maintenance and battery replacement. The contract covers 9 Stryker Power Pro stretchers, 8 Stryker stair chairs, and 5 Stryker power load systems. The cost is $23,353.60. We request approval by the Board 6. Approve and ratify hauling services for the week of November 18 to November 22, 2024, from Sand Creek Land Construction Public Works. Had Sand Creek Land Construction hauling additional rock to the BCPW yard on the week of November 18 to November 22, at a cost of $23,310. Their services are aiding in the continued repairs using the Debbie Emergency Fund. 7. Approve and ratify hauling services for the week of November 18 to November 22, 2024, from J.L. Derisso Trucking Public Works. Had J.L. Derisso Trucking hauling additional rock from Augusta to the BCPW yard on the week of November 18 to November 22, at a cost of $32,292.75. Their services are aiding in the continued repairs using the DEBI Emergency Fund. 8. Approve and ratify hauling services for the week of November 11th to November 15th, 2024. From J.L. Derisso Trucking Public Works had J.L. Derisso Trucking hauling additional rock from Augusta to the BCPW yard on November 8th and the week of November 11th to the 15th, at a cost of $32,865.75. Their services are aiding in the continued repairs using the DEBI Emergency Fund. 9. Authorize renewal of an Indigent Defense Services Agreement with the Ogeechee Judicial Circuit Public Defender Office. 10. Approve payment to Thompson Consulting Services, LLC for debris collection monitoring. Thompson Consulting Services was contracted to monitor debris collection to meet FEMA guidelines. Their first 3 weeks of contracted services cost $135,666.69, and it is being funded through the pre-established emergency funds for public works. 11. Grant a 2025 alcoholic beverage renewal license for package retail beer and wine sales to certain establishments with a current 2024 license number 4 Stilson Country Corner, Inc. Gerald Forehand number 9 MDH Enterprises, Inc. Deborah and Michael Haddon number 48 Eldora Penny Saver, Edward Maddox number 66 Shiv Ganga Food Mart, Inc. El Chipo, Anitabhan Patel, Jayashkumar Patel number 146 DN 12, Inc. Karankumar Patel Sumner Brothers LLC, Pojo's No. 2, No. 72, Pojo's Gas and Go, No. 112, Pojo's Country Store No. 5, No. 141, Perry Sumner, Connie Sumner 12. Approve payment to Yancey for greater fuel system repairs. Public Works is requesting approval to process payment to Yancey for fuel system repairs on a Cat grader. The fuel system was tampered with and needed to be replaced. All repairs came at a cost of $37,676.12. X. New BUSINESSAPPROVED 1. Approve updating door lock monitoring repairs per state code. Update is for all three elevators in the judicial annex. Elevators must be updated to meet state code. Approved 2. Approve a resolution for a 1% special local option sales tax resource person, facilitator. County Attorney Jeff Aiken's approval of the attached resolution will impose a 1% Special Purpose Local Option Sales Tax, SPLOST, subject to approval in a referendum to be held on March 18, 2025, to be imposed for a period of 6 years and for the raising of approximately $138 million for the purpose of funding certain capital outlay projects. The resolution includes the same project descriptions and cost estimates that are in the intergovernmental agreement between the county and all the municipalities, which agreement was approved by the county on November 19 and has also been approved by all the municipalities. If the referendum passes, this will be a continuation of the current 1% SPLOST that is set to expire on September 30, 2025. The resolution also requests the Board of Elections and Registration to issue the call for the referendum on March 18, 2025. The resolution of the Board of Elections and Registration issuing the call will be on the agenda for its December 9 meeting. The call will then be published in the Statesboro Herald on December 14, 2024. Approved 3. Acknowledge an amended and restated economic development agreement by and between the Development Authority of Bullitt County and REVALYU, US, LLC. The Development Authority previously entered into an economic development agreement with REVALYU, US, LLC in March of 2023 for the construction of a $100 million facility in the Gateway 2 Industrial Park. However, the project has now grown by more than double to $255 million and new bonds are being issued. Therefore, an amended and restated economic development agreement has been entered into and the commissioners and tax assessors are being asked to acknowledge it. The pilot payment schedule is the same as for the previous agreement. Approved 4. Approve an interim county manager employment agreement. Approval of the attached agreement will engage Cindy Steinman to serve as the interim county manager on the terms and conditions set forth in the agreement. 5. Discussion and/or action regarding notice of termination of intergovernmental agreement for fire protection services with the City of Statesboro. The attached Intergovernmental Agreement for Fire Protection Services provides that in consideration for Statesboro providing fire protection services in the Statesboro Fire Tax District, which is basically the unincorporated area of Bullock County within a 5-mile driving distance from city fire stations, the county will levy a tax within the Statesboro Fire Tax District and pay the revenue to the city of Statesboro. The current agreement was entered into in June of 2020 and has a 5-year term commencing on July 1, 2020 and ending on June 30, 2025. The agreement further provides that it will automatically renew for an additional 5-year term unless notice is given by the terminating party no less than 6 months prior to the expiration date. Therefore, the board needs to decide whether it wants to send a written notice of termination to the city prior to the end of the year or whether it wants to allow the agreement to renew for an additional 5-year term. Termination would be appropriate if the county either wants to renegotiate aspects of the agreement or change the delivery of fire protection services in some way. If the agreement does renew for an additional 5-year term, it has a provision that allows either party to terminate at any time by providing 12 months written notice to the other party. So even if the agreement automatically renewed, the parties wouldn't necessarily be locked in for the entire 5 years. Fire Chief Tapley strongly advocated for terminating the agreement. He pointed out that the existing terms prevent the county from building fire infrastructure in the 5-mile district, hindering service improvements. He also emphasized the financial inefficiency, noting that Statesboro receives approximately $6,500 per call compared to the county's $1,000 per call cost. Tapley argued that if the county were to take over, it could offer first response medical services and handle a greater volume of calls at a lower cost to taxpayers while maintaining strong mutual aid agreements with the city. Commissioners were reminded of the financial implications, including the need to create a unified fire tax district for the entire unincorporated area if the county takes over. This would ensure fair funding under Georgia's Service Delivery Act. After hearing from the fire chief and other officials, the board voted unanimously to terminate the agreement and authorized the county manager to send a formal notice of termination. This opens the door for renegotiating terms or transitioning the county to manage fire protection in the 5-mile district, with a focus on improving efficiency, service quality, and cost-effectiveness for citizens. Public comment. Jimmy DeLoach shared some heartfelt thoughts with the commission. He kicked things off by recognizing Tom Couch for his 20 years of service to Bullock County, saying while they didn't always see eye to eye, Couch's commitment to the county's employees and his dedication through tough times was undeniable. DeLoach said it spoke volumes that Couch focused more on the people who keep the county running than on himself. He welcomed Commissioner Davis to the board, teasing a bit about how long they've known each other, back when they both had hair. DeLoach challenged Davis to lead boldly and to be a strong voice for the county. He extended that challenge to Ray Mosley, Anthony Simmons, Toby Connor, and Timmy Rushing, urging them to stay true to their convictions and always act in the best interest of Bullock County. DeLoach didn't stop there. He gave a nod to Jappy Stringer for his work advocating for public safety, noting Stringer's years as a volunteer firefighter. He praised his servant's heart and the kind of leadership that puts the community first. He also gave a shout-out to Chairman Roy Thompson, who had to step out early, commending his decades of service on the commission and in the recreation department, calling his work selfless and impactful. Turning to the commission as a whole, DeLoach acknowledged the tough decisions they've made, particularly around taxes. He admitted he doesn't like paying more any more than the next person but pointed out the bigger issue, the burden on property owners to fund county operations. He encouraged finding fairer solutions, hinting that another SPLOST might be worth considering down the line. Tim Powell addressed the groundwater sustainability program, highlighting its reactive nature and gaps, like failing to address crop loss or costs for residents displaced by water issues. He proposed a proactive solution, inspect and lower well pumps now for the 1,100 residents potentially impacted by water level drops, preventing emergencies later. Powell suggested funding these adjustments using revenue from water sales to Bryan County and replenishing the mitigation fund. If Bryan County disagrees, he recommended they seek water elsewhere. His focus was clear: Act now to prevent avoidable crises and protect residents. Lisha Naville addressed the commission with her ongoing concern about rapid growth and its impact on the county, schools, and infrastructure. Highlighting the approval of over 300 housing units in a single evening, she called for a building moratorium to allow time for infrastructure, roads, and schools to catch up. Naville emphasized that the approval of housing developments directly impacts the school system, creating a strain as classrooms fill and new facilities, such as elementary schools, become necessary. She urged collaboration between the city, county, and school board to address these challenges holistically, rather than working in isolation. Naville stressed the importance of pausing to plan for sustainable growth that benefits the entire community. She concluded by expressing appreciation for the efforts of county staff, particularly for their responsiveness to local concerns, but reiterated her plea for a united approach to managing growth responsibly. 11. Commission and staff comments. 12. Executive session, personnel. 13. Adjourn. View the meeting agenda here. View the live stream below.